Our next speaker is coming to us online, and it is Dr. Ben Gauntlett that we welcome. Ben commenced his term as Disability and Disability Discrimination Commissioner in May of 2019. Ben is a quadriplegic following a schoolboy rugby union accident aged 16 in Perth. He has the experience of living with a disability and accessing care in Australia, Western Australia, Victoria and the ACT, as well as in the UK and the US. Prior to commencing as the Disability Discrimination Commissioner, Ben worked as a barrister in Western Australia and Victoria. He also worked as an associate to the Honourable Justice Kenneth Hain at the High Court of Australia, as counsel assisting the Solicitor General of the Commonwealth, and taught law in Australia and the United Kingdom. If that's not enough, Ben holds an undergraduate degrees in law and commerce from the University of WA, and he was awarded a Rhodes Scholarship. He also holds a Master of Laws from New York University and a Doctor of Philosophy in Law from the University of Oxford, from where he studied as a Rhodes Scholar. Ben, we are deeply honoured to have you with us, albeit online, and we're keen to listen to what you have to say. So please join with me in welcoming Dr. Ben Gauntlett.
Thank you very much for that kind introduction. I've been informed that in the online world, the attention span is in the order of seconds rather than minutes or hours. So I'm going to hopefully try and keep you engaged for a full 45 minutes, which may be a challenge, but I'm hopeful that it can occur because inclusive education is an incredibly important topic in disability policy in Australia. But before I get into the main aspect of my remarks, I should pay my respects to the traditional owners of the land upon which I sit today, being the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. And I pay my respects to Aboriginal leaders past, present and emerging. And I pay my respects to any other Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who are in the audience today as well. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, good disability policy benefits all Australians. And nowhere is that statement perhaps more apt than in the area of education. I want to make three interrelated points today. First, the arguments for inclusive education are strong, but it is important to be clear what is meant by inclusive education. Second, although there are broad policies referred to by government relating to education, and it can be easy to focus upon large-scale reforms, educational outcomes for people with disability and the nature of disability itself are both deeply personal. Respectful personal interactions are a critical building block in disability frameworks for people with disability in education. Third, we have a Royal Commission into violence, abuse, neglect, and exploitation of people with disability for a reason. COVID-19 has highlighted some additional issues. Any discussion of inclusive education cannot be divorced from other human rights considerations. In Australia, this means having a robust national disability strategy, including any associated outcomes framework and national disability data asset. Educational outcomes, educational settings do not occur in isolation from other policies which affect people with disabilities' lives. I'm particularly delighted to be here because my parents are actually both school teachers. And I'm aware that in having parents that are teachers, that systems can constrain individuals and schools. But we need to measure outcomes in schooling of people with disability and invest in capacity building. Change is needed. The status quo must change for people with disability. But as with most things for people with disability in Australia, the question is no longer why, it's how. Today, I'm going to initially outline some important statistics concerning disability in education. I'm then going to talk about the importance of inclusive education by referring initially to the International Legal and Policy Human Rights Framework. Within that discussion, I'm going to articulate what is meant by inclusive education and the concept of progressive realisation, and outline some critical issues to be considered in Australia regarding inclusive education. Finally, I'm going to refer to the Committee on the Rights of Persons with Disability recent feedback on Australia's compliance with its convention obligations before hopefully addressing what is a simple question: what next? The Australian Institute of Health and Welfare collects data periodically relating to education in schools for people with disability. And it's found that approximately 10% of school students have a disability. Of school-aged children with a disability, approximately 90% go to school. And 90% of those students go to a mainstream school, with approximately 10 to 12% going to what's termed a special school. 9.1% of people aged between 15 and 64 with disability are studying for a non-school qualification, whilst 15% without disability are doing the same. The educational attainment of people with disability relative to those who do not have a disability is markedly lower. Only 34% of people aged 20 and over have completed year 12, where 66% of people have completed year 12 without a disability. It is obvious within these settings that improvement is required. Access to education and the level of education attained affect many things in a person's life. These include employment and the ability to achieve economic independence. People with disability are more likely to leave school at younger ages and to have a lower level of educational attainment. We need this to change. In human rights law and in policy for people with disability, there is a strong emphasis on the need for inclusive education. Both children and adults with disability have the right to an education that is free from discrimination and provided on the basis of equal opportunity. To protect the rights of people with disability and provide them with an equitable and participatory learning experience and environment, education systems must engage holistically with the concept of inclusion. This involves embedding the values of diversity and inclusion, not just in classroom teaching, but also in leadership, in relationships with parents or caregivers, in the provision of medical and counselling services, and in the design of physical environments. Placing diversity and inclusion at the heart of education systems can have a significant impact on community perceptions of disability that lasts for generations. Education is an incredibly important human right because it is a key enabler of other rights, particularly for people with disability. The United Nations Committee on the Rights of the Child has stated that the aim of education is to promote, support, and protect the human dignity innate in every child and his or her equal and inalienable rights. Furthermore, as the United Nations Committee on the Rights of Persons with Disability has explained, education is the primary means by which persons with disabilities can lift themselves out of poverty, obtain the means to participate fully in their communities, and be safeguarded from exploitation. It is also the primary means of achieving inclusive society. The promotion of inclusive education in international human rights law arises from over 40 years of research that has shown the considerable benefits of inclusive education to all students with and without disability. In particular, inclusive education results in wide-scale and systemic benefits for everyone. These include improved overall development of students with disability, including academic and social development, improved inclusion of persons with disability in the labour market and society as a whole, a number of both academic and social benefits for students without disabilities, and broader benefits for communities such as acceptance of diversity and improved tolerance. Furthermore, from an economic standpoint, studies have shown that inclusive education is cost effective. The justification for inclusive education, though, is not just based upon international human rights law instruments. It's also based upon values obtained within sustainable development goals. The United Nations Sustainable Development Goal number 4 recognises the centrality of inclusive education to the development of inclusive, peaceful, and fair societies. When education is more inclusive, it is likely to be replicated in civic participation, employment, and community life. Conversely, when the opposite exists, it is likely to lead to large-scale segregation and perpetuate discrimination against traditional marginal groups. Inclusive education is therefore not just a plan or policy, it is a general approach and mindset that embraces human diversity. It values the well-being of all students and it benefits all students with and without disability and leads to more inclusive societies in the long term. In terms of why we have inclusive education, it is important to though step back through some international and domestic human rights frameworks to establish the very essence of the need for inclusive education, but also how it can be articulated and defined. Australia has ratified a range of international human rights instruments that include clear rights and obligations relating to education for people with disability. Most notably, the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disability and the Convention on the Rights of the Child. At a national level, there is also a legal framework relating to protecting the rights of people with disability and the right to an education. These are contained within the Disability Discrimination Act 1992, a piece of Commonwealth legislation, the disability standards for education that are made under that act, and were in part referred to in the Melbourne Declaration Education Goals for Young Australians, which has recently been replaced by the Alice Springs Education Declaration, which sadly did not really include a reference to disability. And finally, there is the National Disability Strategy, which is being considered this year and will hopefully we'll have a new one at the end of the year. In terms of the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disability, it is important to acknowledge that the Convention embraces what's known as the social model of disability. That is, that disability is a social construct which implicates on a person's life rather than a medical model which looks at a person's impairment for a medical justification. What is a person with a disability is defined broadly under the convention and includes those who have long-term physical, mental, intellectual, sensory impairments, which in interaction with various barriers may hinder their full and effective participation in society on an equal basis with others. The convention reflects a broad understanding of disability and recognises that disability is an evolving concept resulting from an interaction with attitudinal and environmental barriers. As the convention is Australia's most recent and internationally the most recent human rights convention, it offers important guidance for realising the human rights of people with disability in Australia. Many provisions of the convention require states, which include Australia, to take positive action, including significant law reform to implement the principles underlying the convention and protecting the rights within it. It is important to acknowledge that when we look at human rights in Australia, that the right to education and inclusive education cannot be divorced from a number of other rights. They include the right to equality and non-discrimination, the rights of children, the right to accessibility, the right to liberty and security of the person, the right to freedom from torture or cruel, inhuman or degrading treatment or punishment, the right to freedom from exploitation, violence and abuse, the right to integrity of the person, and above all in Article 24, the right to education. The convention is the first legally binding instrument to expressly enshrine the concept of quality inclusive education. The content of the right I'll discuss shortly, but it's important to acknowledge that this right did not come out of thin air. It was not by surprise. It was a right that was, in a sense, pre-existing or referred to in a number of other human rights instruments, which finally led to the articulation of the right in the Convention of the Rights of Persons with Disability. In particular, it is important to note the role of the Convention on the Rights of the Child, which in Articles 28 and 29 protects a child's right to education, which sets out that certain standards of education are required and that education should be accessible and free to all students and provided on the basis of equal opportunity. Other human rights instruments that are important include the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman or Degrading Treatment or Punishment, the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women and the International Covenant on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination. At a domestic level, education is regulated in a disability parlance by a complex web of interrelated legislation. But most importantly for the discussion today, the Disability Discrimination Act makes disability discrimination unlawful and promotes equal rights, equal opportunity, and equal access for people with disability, including with respect to education. The Disability Discrimination Act makes clear that people with disability have a right to study at any educational institution in the same way as other students. The Disability Discrimination Act prohibits discrimination against people with disability in regard to admission to a course. It obliges educational institutions to enrol a person with disability if they meet the entry requirements, regardless of their disability. Assumptions about disability should not be made An entrance to a course should only be based on a person's ability to meet the entry requirements. A person with a disability cannot be treated less favourably than a person without a disability, for example, by being made to pay higher fees. For example, it would be illegal for a person with disability to be made to pay higher fees than a person without a disability. The Disability Discrimination Act also requires educational institutions to ensure that their courses and premises are accessible. This includes excursions, the delivery of lessons or lectures, accessible formats for information, and accessible student common areas. It is not permitted under the Disability Discrimination Act to expel a person because of their disability or to subject a person with disability to any other detriment. This extends to harassment and humiliating comments in relation to a person's disability. Under the Disability Discrimination Act, an educational institution is meant to make reasonable adjustment for a person with disability attending that institution, so long as it meets the essential coursework requirements. This may include, for example, changing the desk heights to enable a wheelchair user to participate in activities. It may also include structural changes to the built environment, such as providing ramps, modifying toilets, or ensuring classrooms are accessible, providing or modifying equipment used for the purposes of learning and studying, modifying assessment procedures, and changing course delivery. The Disability Discrimination Act also provides that people with the right to make a complaint to the Australian Human Rights Commission about unlawful discrimination on the ground of disability, where the complaint cannot be resolved by conciliation. The Act also provides for the possibility of pursuing that matter in the Federal Court of Australia for an enforceable remedy. Under the Disability Discrimination Act, there are also standards which are made under Section 31. Under these standards, the Disability Education Standards for Education have been formulated to clarify and elaborate the applicable legal obligations in relation to education for people with disability. The fundamental principle underlying these standards is that people with disability should have the same opportunities and choices as people without disability in applying for enrolment, participating in lessons and courses, and accessing facilities provided by educational institutions. These standards are reviewed every 5 years. And the last review actually took place last year and on Friday was released online. The Honourable Alan Tudge, MP, Minister for Education and Youth, released the report and it made 13 recommendations which reflect 4 reform directions, one being empowering and supporting students with disability and their families. The second being strengthening the knowledge and capability of education, educators and providers. The third being embedding accountability for the standards throughout the education system. And the fourth being building awareness and capability in the early childhood education and care sector. What then are the ramifications of these legislation or this legislation in Australia? It is important to understand when we look at the education of children, and in particular the education of children with disability, that, as I said at the outset, we cannot divorce this from broader issues relating to people with disability in Australia. There are 4.4 million Australians living with disability, and the likelihood of disability increases with age. Approximately 80% of disability is acquired through the totality of someone's life. There are also 2.65 million Australians that exist with caring responsibilities. Perhaps not surprising then when you say, what about the issue of people with disability in school and how are people with disability to be treated in schools? It is important to acknowledge that people with disability are not at school 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that the role of a school will be impacted upon directly by how that person is treated in society. It will be impacted upon by the living circumstances of that person with a disability, by their ability to access personal support and assistance, by the ability of their caregivers to access personal support and assistance, and the training that is provided to educators and people in education to enable them to teach people with disability in a way that is equal to others. In 2010, the Australian government created what was termed the National Disability Strategy. The National Disability Strategy was a document that was created by Commonwealth, state, territory, and local governments, which was meant to reflect Australia's obligation under the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disability. It has, as one of its foundational areas, the area of learning and skills relating to people with disability. And it looked at, in particular, early childhood education and care, schools, further education, vocational education, training, transitions from education to employment, and lifelong learning. This document is being reviewed this year. And one of the very real concerning issues in Australia is to what extent have people with disability been able to access education to achieve their full participation relative to those without disability. One of the areas that I'm particularly concerned about in my role as Disability Discrimination Commissioner is the area of employment. We rank 21st out of 29 in the OECD for the employment of people with disability. What that means is that there is a very real issue as to why people with disability are not getting jobs. A clear and important issue for us to understand within that framework is that there is a relationship between education and employment. And one of the concerns is that people with disability are not getting an education that equips them to get employment on a basis that is equal to others. It's easy to criticise in the area of inclusion and diversity, though, and it is so important to sometimes step back and to ask ourselves, what is it that we're trying to achieve? But I think in that respect, it's important to look at the actual content of Article 24 of the Convention and what is the right to inclusive education. Article 24 of the Convention recognises that people with disability have an equal access to free and inclusive education with reasonable adjustments and supports to meet their full potential and participate effectively in society. In particular, people with disability should not be excluded from the general education system on the basis of disability, and that children with disability should not be excluded from free and compulsory primary education or from secondary education on the basis of disability. People with disability need to be able to access an inclusive, high quality and free primary education and secondary education on an equal basis with others in the communities in which they live. Reasonable accommodation of an individual's requirements should be provided. People with disability need to receive the support they need within the general education to facilitate their effective education. And individualised support measures should be given to ensure that an individual with disability can maximise their academic and social development consistent with the goal of full inclusion. The term inclusive education is not actually defined in the Convention, but has been clarified in General Comment Number 4. And the committee has stated that inclusive education needs to be distinguished from a number of other areas in the education system. It also needs to be distinguished from the terms exclusion, segregation, and integration. Exclusion occurs when students are directly or indirectly prevented from or denied access to education in any form. Segregation occurs when the education of students with disability is provided in separate environments designed or used to respond to a particular impairment or various impairments in isolation from students without disabilities. Integration occurs when students with disability are placed in existing mainstream educational institutions without altering the way in such institutions operate. Thus, inclusive education is more than simply increasing the number of children with disability in mainstream schools. As the Convention Committee explained, placing students with disability within mainstream classes without accompanying structural changes to, for example, organisation, curriculum, and teaching and learning strategies does not constitute inclusion. Rather, inclusion requires the adaptation of education systems to accommodate the individual needs of children with disability. It involves a process of systemic reform embodying changes and modifications in content, teaching methods, approaches, structures, and strategies in education. The failure of education systems to adapt to individual needs helps to explain why some students with disability may feel unsatisfied attending mainstream schools despite the opportunities that such schooling provides for participation in society. Some students with disability may not feel accepted in mainstream schools and may even be the victims of bullying or harassment, with the result that the students and or their families may prefer a special education setting rather than a mainstream setting. But the onus is on the education system to accommodate the children with disability and provide a personalised educational response rather than expecting the student to fit the system. There was intense debate during the convention negotiations regarding the role, if any, of special education facilities tailored to the needs of people with disability. Some countries and disability organisations advocated for the flexibility to deliver education in specialised settings. This was seen as particularly important for students who are blind, deaf, or deaf-blind. And the convention reflects an understanding of this debate. But the CRPD committee stated in general comment number 4 that the obligation to move to a goal of full inclusion is not compatible with sustaining two systems of education, a mainstream education system and a special segregated education system. Rather, states must move as expeditiously and effectively as possible towards a true realisation of Article 21. There continues to be debate regarding the role of special schools, but it is difficult to see what that debate should look like when it is suggested that the CRPD is clear that state parties must take concrete steps consistent with the goal of full inclusion in relation to the education of people with disability. The goal of Article 24 is for the education system taken as a whole to be inclusive and directed to the full development of human potential and sense of dignity and self-worth. How we get there is a very, very important issue. It should be noted that in terms of complying with the need for inclusive education, it is suggested that the appropriate role or the appropriate outcome that needs to be achieved is through the concept of progressive realisation. Progressive realisation understands that you have to take steps within the context of the maximum available resources with achieving the necessary rights under the convention. Therefore, it is not expected that Article 24 would be applied tomorrow. But what it does mean is that state parties have a specific and continuing obligation to move as expeditiously and effectively as possible towards the full realisation of inclusive education. This is not, in the words of the CRPD committee, compatible with sustaining two systems of education, a mainstream education system and a special segregated education system. It is critical from a human rights standpoint, this understanding of what is inclusive education is known. Australia, in seeking to implement Article 24, should remember that there is a need for a non-discriminatory education system that undertakes reasonable accommodation to ensure that people with disability are included. The implementation of the right to inclusive education is something that has been discussed broadly and in some degree of specificity in the disability in the Royal Commission into Violence, Abuse, Neglect and Exploitation. In particular, the first hearing of the Royal Commission into Violence, Abuse, Neglect and Exploitation in Brisbane actually referred to the issue of education, and a subsequent hearing has done so too. It's obvious in listening to those hearings that there is some way to go for Australia to realise the goal of inclusive education. There are competing views as to what's needed. There are competing views as to what's good practice. It is important within these debates, which can be extremely challenging in nature because it concerns Australia's most precious resource, which is its children, that the debate remains respectful. In my view, when we look at factors impeding the implementation of the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disability, there are a number of key issues that perhaps must be considered as a way to achieving a final outcome. The first of these is the issue of registration and gatekeeping. That is, schools turning away students because of their disability by discouraging enrolment or not allowing them to attend full time. Gatekeeping is unlawful, but it is difficult to regulate. Unofficial gatekeeping may take many forms, which could include, for example, suspending or expelling a child from the school or having a child have an unpleasant school experience so they leave and go elsewhere. It can also include not including a child in certain school activities, which can make that child again wish to go elsewhere. The growth of segregated learning, or placing students in different classrooms, is again a critical issue that must be considered in Australia. This has been to disproportionately affect students with autism. The persistent use of restrictive practices in schools is again problematic, and one in which many governments have looked at and will continue to look at. However, a 2019 survey of students with disability found that 21% of respondents had experienced restraint at school and 21% had experienced seclusion. Within the context of talking about the negative aspects of education, however, it is of the utmost importance to consider the potential lack of support, training and resources for teachers and principals that has taken place to educate them as to how to deal with students with disabilities, but also to understand the concept of such things as reasonable adjustment. We need to equip teachers, educators, schools and systems with an understanding of the totality of human diversity to enable them to succeed. It is a particularly unfair response to a very, very difficult problem to just point at the teacher and tell them to improve. It is of the utmost importance that when we look at reforming the education system to make it more inclusive, that we understand the need for teachers to be properly educated, developed, and trained to make their jobs easier. As with most things in life, it's often easy to criticise. It is, though, however, very difficult to be constructive. I think one of the real reasons why countries struggle to implement inclusive education, and unfortunately most countries struggle to do so, is because there is a need to have very, very high quality teacher training, and that costs money. But in terms of the benefit of inclusive education, both in terms of the student but also the broader community, it is time for governments to look at the training of teachers in a different way. Good disability policy benefits all Australians. It benefits all Australians not only because of the values of diversity and inclusion upon which it teaches, but also because what we do not know that what will occur in each and every one of our lives. That is, by teaching people at a young age about the awareness of disability, about how people with disability can be treated in the community, we are, in a sense, future-proofing society, so that we know that people with disability will always be treated on an equal basis to others. When we think about the Disability Royal Commission and we think about why this issue is so challenging for it to resolve, I think it's important to understand that it is very easy to create harsh and challenging debates which are difficult for both people with disability and policymakers to reach agreement on. But what we do need to agree upon is a process. And that process should have a goal of inclusive education. And the way that we need to reach that goal is to set in place a series of key underlying foundations to good disability education policy. The first of these is appropriate data collection. The second is good training for our teachers. All teachers should be trained in how to deal with people with disability, no matter what area they deal in. And the third and final area is the issue of ensuring that when we deal with interactions between people with disability and their parents and schools, that schools have the tools to ensure that they can, to the fullest extent possible, keep those interactions relating to such things as reasonable adjustment, respectable and respectful. When we think about disability in the community, it is easy at the present time to build bonfires. But we need to instead build bridges. And the way to do that is for educational leaders to lead by example. And so my lasting thought for you all today is that when you consider the issue of people with disability in your school or in the policy area in which you work or in the jurisdiction in which you work, please remember that ultimately you're dealing with people. People who need to be treated with respect. And in doing so, it is of vital importance that to achieve inclusive education outcomes, that you remember to try and at all times, no matter how fraught the negotiations or the discussions appear to be, that we treat people with disability with respect. Your example can serve as a valuable example to others in ensuring that people with disability understand that they can be treated with respect for the entirety of their lives. It is, in difficult circumstances, of the utmost importance that, above all, we understand that inclusive education is a goal that we can achieve, provided we're all committed to doing so. Thank you.
Ben initially said he was going to speak for 30 minutes, but I could have listened for 30 more. We don't have time for questions, but we did have a couple of questions that have come through online. And Ben, with your permission, we may send them through to you to seek some guidance. What a powerful case for inclusive education, a really cogent response for not why, but potentially what we should be doing, with such detail and far-reaching consequences and responsibilities for us as educators, but also fitting us within our civil society. I think I heard an agreement when you said, Ben, it's not just to tell the teachers to improve, but it is a responsibility of all of us. Thank you very much for presenting to us, for the detail, for the expansive information that you have given us. I think there's very much that we can take from that. So thank you very much, Ben.